In Hebrews chapter 11, that famous chapter that is often referred to as the Hall of Fame of Faith, we have this reference to Jacob in Hebrews 11:21. It says, "By faith, Jacob, when he was dying, blessed each of Joseph's sons and worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff." Today, we'll be reading the story that's referenced by that verse, and it's a beautiful portrayal of Jacob at the end of his life. It could be said that Jacob is the poster child for the truth that it takes a lifetime to make a man or woman of God, and we've pointed that out before as we've moved through his story out of the book of Genesis. When we first meet Jacob, you might remember he's this deceiving, scheming cheater, willing to go to any lengths to get what he wants. The name Jacob actually means heel catcher, which is a figurative expression referring to someone who takes from others through underhanded means, someone who deceives and takes advantage of others. When we get to the end of Jacob's life, we see this beautiful, profound change that has taken place in his life. He is a different person. God has done a wonderful work in him. Some say people never change. If that were true, then we all have no hope, because who among us doesn't want to be changed? The truth is, God does change people, and the story of Jacob illustrates the truth that God changes people. The gospel of Jesus Christ really is a message of hope that says we can be changed. Well, let's flip over to Genesis chapter 46, where we'll be picking up our story today. If you have your Bible, Genesis chapter 46. Last time, we read the story of Jacob being reunited with his son Joseph after having spent 22 years believing that Joseph was dead. And when they see each other, they throw their arms around one another, and it says that they wept for a long time. No, we can hardly imagine what that must have been like after 22 years. Well, some might be tempted to criticize Jacob for not faring better than he did during that period of time when he thought Joseph was dead. You might remember his grieving over his thought-to-be-dead son had dominated and crippled his life. But as we've said before, the hero in this story is not a human being. It's God. The Lord took hold of Jacob and he carried him through that dark period of his life when he had lost his will to live. The Lord does the same for you and me. He's the one that takes us and carries us through life when we are not strong enough to walk on our own. He's there when we are full of faith, and he's there when we are confused and feeling lost. Well, Jacob and his family, all of his children and his grandchildren, they have packed their bags and they have moved to the region of Goshen in Egypt to live. And this is where we pick up our story in Genesis 46, verse 31. After arriving in Egypt, Joseph, he presents his brothers to Pharaoh and obtains formal permission to make the land of Goshen their home. And Pharaoh is very gracious and generous to them. He gives them permission to live in the best part of the land of Goshen, allowing them to have their flocks and to carry on their occupation of shepherding that they did back in Canaan. And then in 47, verse 7, which is where we'll begin reading this morning, once all the formalities have taken place between Joseph's brothers and Pharaoh, Joseph brings his father, Jacob, before Pharaoh for them to meet one another. Verse 7, it says, "Then Joseph brought his father Jacob in and presented him before Pharaoh. After Jacob blessed Pharaoh, Pharaoh asked him, 'How old are you?' And Jacob said to Pharaoh, 'The years of my pilgrimage are 130. My years have been few and difficult, and they do not equal the years of the pilgrimage of my fathers.' Then Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from his presence." So the meeting of these two men, it's an interesting meeting. Jacob, an old man of 130 years, he blesses the young Pharaoh of Egypt. We don't know how old Pharaoh is at this time, but he is considerably younger than Jacob. And usually, the greater blesses the lesser. And in this case, in regards to rank and position, the Pharaoh is the greater of these two. But it doesn't play out that way in their meeting. Instead, we see Jacob assuming this fatherly role before the great Pharaoh, blessing him both when he enters the room and then he blesses him again as he leaves the room. Jacob is unmoved by the power and position of Pharaoh. Why is that? Well, first, he's in an age when these kinds of things don't sway him any longer. I mean, he's 130 years old. He shows appropriate respect to the Pharaoh, but he's no longer interested in trying to win special favor with Pharaoh. I mean, he's just too old for that. When we're looking at the short end of our life, there's a sobering up that can take place, which puts position and wealth into a different place than it may have had earlier in our life when we were younger. We begin to understand that there are other things more valuable than position and wealth. It's unfortunate that we often don't ask that question, what am I living my life for, until our life has largely already been lived. Then we're forced instead to ask that question, what have I lived my life for? And we don't always like the answer that we give for that question, because we realize that we have spent far too much of our life living for things that really don't matter much in the end. Well, second, Jacob, he may not have had a physical kingdom at this moment, but he believes in this promise that the Lord has given him. He is going to be a great nation of people. Jacob is so convinced of the certainty of that promise that it's as good as done already for him. So in his mind, the Pharaoh and himself are two kings standing before each other. He happens to be the king of a nation raised up by the one true God of the universe, making him the one possessing the superior rank. Therefore, he's the one who does the blessing of the other one. I mean, imagine for a moment that you come before someone who appears to outrank you. Let's say they are a captain and you are wearing the uniform of a private. But you have an official letter of promotion that states that you've been promoted to the rank of general. You're simply waiting for your new uniform to arrive that goes along with your rank. Well, how would you see yourself when you come before this captain? I mean, to him, you look like a private. But the letter that you have says that you're a general. It's kind of like that for Jacob. The Lord has told Jacob that he's going to be a great nation, even though, in current appearance, he's just a simple shepherd. Well, what about you? If you're a follower of Jesus, then you are a co-heir of Jesus Christ. Do you know what Jesus owns? Do you know what he has authority over? Everything. We obviously need to respect the authorities and the powers that are in place in this world that we're living in. But who you really are is dramatically different than what you look like. See, you may look like a simple shepherd in appearance, but you're destined to share in the glory of Jesus. Well, Pharaoh, he's intrigued by this old man Jacob standing before him. He says, "How old are you?" And Jacob, he replies, "The years of my pilgrimage are 130. My years have been few and difficult, and they don't equal the years of the pilgrimage of my fathers." He says, "My years have been few." Well, Jacob's grandfather Abraham, he lived to the age of 175 years. His own father Isaac lived to the age of 180 years. His own pilgrimage, he says, doesn't equal theirs. He's a mere 130 years old. I am yet a babe in comparison. You know, the ages of all three of these men are considerable compared to the typical lifespan of people, both then and now. But even their lifespan are mere short few years in comparison to eternity. He says, my years have been difficult. Jacob's life has indeed been difficult. His life has been marked by conflict and turmoil much of the time. It started before he was even born. You might remember as he fought with his brother Esau in their mother's womb. The family that he grew up in, it was a divided family. His father favored his brother Esau. His mother favored him. He tricked his brother out of his birthright as the firstborn son. He participated in deceiving his father, tricking him into giving Jacob the final family blessing rather than his brother Esau, who his father had intended to bless. He had to run for his life from his brother who wanted to kill him for what he had done. He lived in exile for many years. His uncle Laban constantly tried to cheat him. He was tricked into marrying a woman that he didn't love. He watched his sons massacre an entire town of people as retribution for the raping of his daughter. His son Reuben had an affair with his concubine. He lost his wife Rachel, the one that he loved, during the birth of their second child. He lived believing his favorite son Joseph was dead for 22 years. His life has had lots of struggle and tragedy. Our life can be characterized in a similar way. Our years are few and difficult. Jesus Christ has come to change that, though. He gives us purpose and meaning and a peace that goes beyond understanding, which overcomes the difficulties of this life. And he gives us hope for a future, living forever with him in a paradise, which overcomes our few years in this life. Well, verse 11, it says, so Joseph settled his father and his brothers in Egypt and gave them prosperity and gave them property in the best part of the land, the district of Ramesses, as Pharaoh directed. Joseph also provided his father and his brothers and all his father's household with food according to the number of their children. So the Lord, he provides Joseph's family with everything that they need to prosper and thrive while they're in the land of Egypt. And that's exactly what happens to them. I mean, they're going to thrive in Egypt even as the rest of the country suffers during the remaining years of the drought. And then in verse 13 through 27, which we're not going to read, this section, it describes the remaining 5 years of this famine in Egypt and Canaan and how the people, they are forced to sell their livestock and their land and even themselves to get enough food to survive. Joseph implemented policies that provided the people with food, and it kept the land worked, and it also provided an income for Pharaoh. Verse 27 says, now the Israelites settled in Egypt in the region of Goshen. They acquired property there and were fruitful and increased greatly in number. And verse 28, Jacob lived in Egypt 17 years, and the years of his life were 147. When the time drew near for Israel, or Jacob, to die, he called for his son Joseph and said to him, if I have found favor in your eyes, put your hand under my thigh and promise that you will show me kindness and faithfulness. Do not bury me in Egypt, but when I rest with my fathers, carry me out of Egypt and bury me where they are buried. I will do as you say, he said. Swear to me, he said. Then Joseph swore to him, and Israel worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. So 17 years have now passed since Jacob and his family moved to Egypt. Jacob is an old man. His eyesight is failing. He's mostly bedridden. Jacob knows that his death is near, and he wants to take care of some important details before he dies. So he calls Joseph to his bedside. And the first thing is that Jacob wants to make sure that he's buried in the tomb of his fathers in Canaan rather than here in Egypt. He makes Joseph swear that he will bury him in Canaan, the land of promise. As noted before, this ceremony of having Joseph put his hand under Jacob's thigh while he's making this promise to him, it's basically a super serious version of a pinky swear or a cross my heart. Why is Jacob so concerned about where he is buried. I mean, what difference would it make to him? Jacob knows that Egypt is not a permanent home for himself and his people. He wants to be buried in the land promised to them. He believes God will fulfill his promise. Jacob's people are going to go back to Canaan and possess it. Wanting his remains buried in this promised land, it's an act of faith on his part, really. I want to be buried in my homeland. In a sense, we're like Jacob, living in Egypt as we live out our lives on this planet too. This is not our permanent home, just like Egypt was not Jacob's permanent home. This is not our promised land. 1 Peter 1:17, Peter said, live out your life or your time as foreigners, pilgrims, travelers, temporary residents here on this earth. In 1 Peter 2:11, Peter refers to believers as foreigners, as exiles, as pilgrims, as strangers in this world. Well, after Joseph swore on oath to Jacob that he would make sure that he was buried in the tomb of his fathers in Canaan, it says Israel, or Jacob, remember Israel and Jacob are the same guy, and those two names are used interchangeably oftentimes in this story. Israel, or Jacob, worshipped as he leaned on the top of his staff. Jacob is overwhelmed with awe and gratitude at this moment as he reflects on the faithfulness and the goodness of the Lord to him. I mean, God has saved his family from starvation during this famine. He's reunited him with his beloved son, Joseph, after thinking him dead for 22 years. And now he receives this assurance from that same son, Joseph, that he will be laid to rest with his fathers in the promised land of Canaan. I mean, he's seeing this plan of God fulfilled and carried out before him, and it overwhelms him with joy and gratitude. Jacob worshiping, leaning on his staff, it's a symbol, really, of his life. It's a picture of his life. His staff is a symbol of his pilgrimage. He's a nomad, a traveler, a pilgrim. His staff is his walking stick as he has walked through this life looking toward the promises of the Lord for him. His staff is also a symbol pointing back to that mysterious wrestling match that he had with the Lord that night on the other side of the Jabbok River when his hip was injured. He's walked with a limp ever since that night. And his staff has been his cane, reminding him of his dependence upon the Lord. His leaning on his staff in this moment, it's a symbol of his human frailty and weakness. He's an old man. His body's failing. He's mortal. He's going to die. But finally, he's also a worshiper of the Lord. As he leans on his staff, he worships. The thing that has been his foundation in this security and this constantly shifting life that he's led, it's the Lord. It will be the Lord waiting for him on the other side of this life. The one who's always been there and will always be there for him. The one who is truly worthy to be worshipped. Verse 1 of 48, it says, sometime later, Joseph was told, your father is ill. So he took his two sons, Manasseh and Ephraim, along with him. When Jacob was told, your son Joseph has come to you, Israel rallied his strength and sat up on the bed. Jacob said to Joseph, God Almighty appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan, and there he blessed me and said to me, I am going to make you fruitful and increase your numbers. I will make you a community of peoples, and I will give this land as an everlasting possession to your descendants after you. So Joseph, he gets word that his father Jacob looks like he doesn't have much time left. So he quickly comes. He brings his sons with him, Ephraim and Manasseh. And Jacob, he begins this final conversation with his son by recounting again the covenant promise that the Lord had made to him. Luz is the same as Bethel. You might remember in Genesis 28, the Lord appeared to Jacob at Bethel that night when he had that dream of this stairway that led from earth to heaven, and there were angels ascending and descending on that stairway. The Lord also appeared to him at Bethel when he was returning from Canaan after living with his uncle Laban all those years. And both times the Lord affirmed to Jacob the same covenant promises that he had made to his grandfather Abraham and to his father Isaac. And this is what he makes reference to here. Jacob is passing on that covenant promise now to his own sons. In verse 5, he says, "Now then, your two sons born to you in Egypt before I came to you here will be reckoned as mine. Ephraim and Manasseh will be mine, just as Reuben and Simeon are mine. Any children born to you after them will be yours. In the territory they inherit, they will be reckoned under the names of their brothers. As I was returning from Padan, to my sorrow, Rachel died in the land of Canaan while we were still on the way, a little distance from Ephrath. So I buried her there beside the road to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem." Jacob explains to Joseph that he is adopting Joseph's two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, as his own sons. They are being elevated from being his grandsons to being his sons, equivalent in status with Jacob's other sons in regards to inheritance. By doing this, Jacob is effectively giving Joseph a double inheritance over his other sons, which was part of the birthright of the firstborn. You see, in 1 Chronicles chapter 5, the first two verses there, it helps explain what's going on here. But it explains that although Reuben was literally the firstborn son of Jacob, he forfeited that right when he had an affair with Jacob's concubine. So Joseph, his firstborn son from his wife Rachel, now is receiving the birthright of the firstborn instead. And this story explains why the name Joseph, it doesn't appear as one of the 12 tribes of Israel. I don't know if you've ever noticed that. Maybe you go, why isn't Joseph mentioned as one of the 12 tribes? Instead, we have the tribes of Ephraim and Manasseh, Joseph's sons, who have now become sons of Jacob. As a sidebar, if you're keeping count, you would then note that there are now 13 sons of Jacob, or actually 14 sons, if you said Joseph and his two sons, which become the tribes of Israel. But they somehow become only 12 tribes. So what happened? Well, when the Israelites leave Egypt under the leadership of Moses and go back to Canaan some 400 years from now, the Lord will take the tribe of Levi as his own to serve as priests for the people. So these 13 tribes that Ephraim and Manasseh have become in place of their father Joseph now are reduced again to 12 tribes. So we have the 12 tribes of Israel, and Levi is taken by the Lord as his tribe. So that's how the numbers add back up to 12. Verse 8 says, "When Israel saw the sons of Joseph, he asked, 'Who are these?' 'They're the sons God has given me here,' Joseph said to his father. Then Israel said, 'Bring them to me so I may bless them.' Now Israel's eyes were failing because of old age, and he could hardly see. So Joseph brought his sons close to him, and his father kissed them and embraced them." So Jacob, he's almost completely blind now in his old age, which explains why he doesn't immediately recognize his grandsons, Manasseh and Ephraim, when Joseph brings them to him, and he's like, "Who are these?" He's like, "Well, these are your grandsons, you know, the ones we were just talking about, Manasseh, Ephraim. Yeah, these are them." Right. I knew that. I was testing you, Joseph. But this scene, it reminds us, doesn't it, of the scene from Jacob's own life many years earlier when he appeared before his own blind father, Isaac, to receive that final blessing from him. At that time, you'll remember, he was disguised as his brother Esau, deceiving his father into blessing him instead of Esau. Well, this time there's no deception going on. Verse 11, Israel said to Joseph, I never expected to see your face again, and now God has allowed me to see your children too. What a moving moment this is for these two men, Jacob and Joseph. I mean, try to imagine all of the memories that must be flooding back into their minds in this moment when Jacob says to his son, who he thought had been dead for 22 long, painful, grief-filled years, says, I never expected to see your face again. I thought you were dead. And now, God has allowed me to see your children too. Oh, the goodness of the Lord. I mean, it's so unexpected and wonderful. Then Joseph removed them from Israel's knees and bowed down with his face to the ground. So the two boys were sitting on Jacob's knees, and Joseph takes them off his knees, and he bows before his father. And Joseph, he took both of them, Ephraim on his right toward Israel's left hand, and Manasseh on his left toward Israel's right hand, and brought them close to him. But Israel reached out his right hand and put it on Ephraim's head, though he was the younger, and crossing his arms, he put his left hand on Manasseh's head, even though Manasseh was the firstborn. Manasseh was the firstborn son of Joseph. He's the oldest. So Joseph, he puts Manasseh on Jacob's right hand. That's the hand of blessing. So he positions Manasseh on Jacob's right side, and he takes Ephraim and he positions him on Jacob's left side. But rather than just putting his hands out on the two boys positioned like that, Jacob, he crosses his hands and he puts his right hand on the younger son and the left on the older and pronounces the blessing. This is contrary to the way things normally were done. The firstborn is the one who usually receives the primary blessing. Verse 15 says, then he blessed Joseph and said, may the God before whom my fathers Abraham and Isaac walked faithfully, the God who has been my shepherd all my life to this day, the angel who has delivered me from all harm, may he bless these boys. May they be called by my name and the names of his fathers, Abraham and Isaac, and may they increase greatly on the earth. I want us to notice first how Jacob refers to the Lord here. He says, the God who's been my shepherd all my life, the angel who has delivered me from all harm. He refers to the Lord as his shepherd and as his angel. Figuratively describing the Lord as his provider, his protector, his leader. See, Jacob, he's become such a worshiper and lover of the Lord. He's grown deeply spiritual over the years. He's so different than the man we first met. I pray the same is happening for each of us as we grow older, that we realize more and more the things that are truly important, and that we grow to be deep souls, growing a deep connection with the Lord. 1 John 2:16, John writes, for everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, the pride of life, comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. John was an old man when he wrote those words too. He's come to see what's really important, what really lasts, what really matters, what really fills a person's life. Well, verse 17, it says, when Joseph saw his father placing his right hand on Ephraim's head, he was displeased. So he took hold of his father's hand to move it from Ephraim's head to Manasseh's head. Joseph said to him, no, my father, this one is the firstborn. Put your right hand on his head. So when he sees his father do this, he says, Dad, you're making a mistake. I put the older child on your right. But his father refused and said, I know, my son. I know. He too will become a people, and he too will become great. Nevertheless, his younger brother will be greater than he, and his descendants will become a group of nations. He blessed them that day and said, in your name will Israel pronounce this blessing. May God make you like Ephraim and Manasseh. So he put Ephraim ahead of Manasseh. Jacob blessing and putting the younger son over the older one, it brings to mind, again, the similar experience that took place in his own life. Jacob and his mother, they tricked their father Isaac into blessing him over his older brother Esau. But this time, there's no deceit involved in this. In fact, Joseph, he tries to correct his father, perceiving it to be an error that he's making. But Jacob, he reassures Joseph, he says, I know what I'm doing, son. Trust me. This is the purpose and the will of the Lord. And by faith, Jacob blesses the younger over the older, even though it goes against standard protocol. I think something that's written in one of the Bible commentaries really captures this well for us, where the author writes this. He says, we may well ask why there's so much concern over whether Ephraim or Manasseh was put first. Over and over in these narratives, the answer to that question has been the same. Receiving the blessing that God offers does not rest with one's natural status in the world. On the contrary, the blessing of God is based solely on God's grace. The one to whom the blessing did not belong has become heir of the promise. And this is the gospel of Jesus Christ. Those who don't deserve the blessing of God receive it through grace, through faith in Jesus as Messiah. Ephesians 2, 8, and 9, remember that? For it is by grace you've been saved, through faith. This is not from yourselves, it's the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast. The chapter ends with these final two verses. Then Israel said to Joseph, I'm about to die, but God will be with you and take you back to the land of your fathers. And to you I give one more ridge of land than your brothers, the ridge I took from the Amorites with my sword and my bow. In closing, Jacob has come full circle in his life. He started out as this self-reliant deceiver, and now he's an old man at the end of his life on earth, and he has become a person full of faith, worshiping God, depending on him, and his life is fully submitted to him. It says he's worshiping as he leans on his staff. I love that image. I pray that the same thing will be said of me when I'm in that position. God changed his name during that mysterious wrestling match that he had. He changed it from Jacob to Israel, which means he struggles with God. And he has indeed struggled with both people and with God his whole life, but through his struggling, God has changed him. Christian, I want you to be encouraged by Jacob's story. The Lord is doing his good work in your life too, and he's going to complete the good work that he is doing in your life. If he can change a character like Jacob, he can certainly change you and me. Remember, it takes a lifetime to make a man or woman of God, and God is going to work through your whole lifetime. 2 Corinthians 3:18, Paul wrote, "And we all, who with unveiled faces reflect the Lord's glory, are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit." Let's bow our heads. Father, I thank you for the example of Jacob's life, that it reminds us that you change people. You changed Jacob, and you're changing us. Continue your good work in us, Lord. I ask you to encourage your people this morning, those who feel discouraged and beaten down today about who they are and the progress that they perceive their life is making. You're still here. You're still working in their life, Lord. You've not forsaken them. You've not left them. And you're going to finish the good work you've started. In Jesus' name, amen.